What is going on, guys? Welcome back. So, it's been a minute since my last post. I can't see it right now, but I wanted to go over a couple topics that have been kind of like in the back of my head. And this isn't like somewhat of like an original idea. It's kind of more or less something that when I was listening to another podcast, it kind of like sprang up in my head. Now, I do have some notes that I'm going to pull up. You know, we do everything live, right? and we're going to talk about off-grid communications when the power grid goes down, why it's important to have the ability to have good communications outside of cellular, and how to navigate it. And I have some very, very good information that I've come across that I'm going to point people in the direction to. And then we're also going to talk about some laws that might be going in effect that I'm not a fan of, and why it might matter to prepare now in case it gets like really bad. Now, this is going to be slight. I'm going to be as partisan as possible, but this might get a little political, which we should never fear. We should embrace politics. I think people that say politics is like not necessary or anything. But in my opinion, I think that's from a place of privilege. You know what I mean? It's kind of silly to think that politics don't affect you, but they do, you know, in hindsight. So, you know, that's just my slight perspective on the overview. If there's something that you're not really interested in, obviously, you know, hop off. So I would say that your best bet is to obviously make sure that you listen to this with like a grain of salt, you know. That's my perspective. Now we're gonna talk about some notes that I have here, kind of like guides, but you know, like I said, we're doing this live, of what I've come across. Now, when the internet goes down, you don't really like think about it. You kind of like, you know, like whatever, you know, it's the internet. You might get mad for a few minutes, but then it's generally back up pretty fast. So you probably don't go too often without access to the internet. And I think that's kind of weird that it's kind of weird that like I'm in that era now too, because like there's times that I mean I went a period of time without internet, and now I'm in an era where it's like I'm constantly connected. I'm connected to the internet on my phone. I'm connected to the internet at home. I can always be reached at some point. And that's something that's crazy. Like you're always reachable. You're always a reachable person. So when people say like, oh, I'm not reachable, I mean, it's just kind of interesting. Unless you like, I don't know. I kind of like take my phone and like throw it to the side when I'm at my house, because I like my computer more. Now, I will maybe in the future, I do have a plan that I'm working on where I will be numberless, I will have no number, I will be harder and harder to, you know, reach. And I think that's just from an attack surface. I don't really like text people or call people. I try to only use Signal, and then I want to have like a backup just in case for like, you know, for the companies I still use 2FA SMS, which is my unpreferred method. So when the internet goes out, what do you do? Where do you go? How do you how do you navigate society? Say we have some cyber attacks, and say we have a cyber threat that knocks out the internet. Say we have a solar flare. Like, these things aren't like super unrealistic. They happen quite often, maybe at a smaller scale, but it does exist, and it's going to go only increasingly worse. Now, I'm not here to fearmonger and be like it's going to be civil war, but I do think that if conflicts are starting to rise, there is going to be a couple things that you need to take into account. I think cyber warfare is probably more going to be more common, and it's going to start attacking critical infrastructure like water, or other critical infrastructure like internet. You know, I don't think people realize how much stuff really relies on the internet. I mean, it's a lot. A lot of stuff does too, that you don't even think about. And I mean, our water systems, some of it, its infrastructure probably relies on the internet. It's common now for things, especially in remote locations, with the advancement of MQTT Broker and LoRa and all these other technologies, where people are like using long distance ranged cell sites, where, you know, 5G is getting huge. A lot of stuff is monitored and critically ran through, you know, the connection of the internet. So I'm going to play a clip real quick on something from Undisruptable 27. And they're talking about, this is a very interesting organization that I came across through Firewalls Don't Stop Dragons, that's hosted by Kerry Parker, who I think is, you know, a very knowledgeable person. I do like hearing, you know, everyone's opinion to a certain degree in the space. But I'm going to play a clip here. It's a 2-minute clip. If you want to skip it, you're more than welcome to. But I think this is something that people don't realize what is important. And before you listen, pause and think. I want you to pause and think for a minute. What is the most valuable resource? If you already know what it is, it's completely fine. But pause and think about it. Because I don't think people really think about it, and that's okay. Some people do, but I don't think, I ask this question a lot, and a lot of people don't think about it. And you got to think about how, in an emergency, how long we can go without XYZ. And then I'm going to go into like a list of orders of what I think is important, how to be prepared, some good information on different people in these different spaces that have good information, but obviously do your own research, because you know, not everyone is knowledgeable. But I'm going to play this quick short clip. Just sit back and listen to it. There is a part two to it if you want to, but this goes over, you know, a fundamental perspective.
The systems that we rely on every day for everything from water to power and emergency medical care are subject to escalating harms by accidents, bad actors, and nation-state adversaries. These attacks could quickly move from disruption to destruction. For example, an intentional water hammer that abruptly stops or reverses water flow, sending a shockwave through the system. Attacks on our water systems would be devastating, not just for lack of access at home. No water means no coffee, no toilets, no laundry. No water also means no hydrants to put out fires. No water means no healthcare. A hospital can't run without clean water. No water means no sterilization, no surgery scrubbing, no laboratories, and eventually, no access to life-saving care. Our dependence on connected tech has grown faster than our ability to secure it, and there is evidence that foreign actors are already weaponizing these vulnerabilities. But who would actually do this? In public hearings, Congress and U.S. government cybersecurity leaders have warned the public of Volt Typhoon, an ongoing campaign of successful attacks on U.S. water facilities, led by a People's Republic of China state-sponsored cyber actor. But China is not the only aggressor. We've seen cyber attacks on our water systems from Russia and Iran. These attacks pose a broad and unrelenting risk to critical water infrastructure and could escalate to large-scale destructive attacks on our water systems as early as 2027. The good news is we have time to make changes. We must strive to make our lifeline basic human needs undisruptible. Where we cannot, ensure that our communities are more resilient under fire. This means divesting our reliance on connected technology, better securing our existing systems where we cannot disconnect, and ensuring analog solutions are in place when those systems fail. If this sounds overwhelming, remember, if you can't afford to protect it, you can't afford to connect it. Undisruptable 27 will prioritize the safety, security, and resilience
Beautiful. Literally beautiful perspective. I hope you guys can hear that. I'm going to check back on that in a second. But not the point. The thing is, when it comes to critical infrastructure, like gas, we had that happen, and these SCADA systems, which are systems that operate a lot of our utility infrastructure, this was probably most likely put in place to keep up with the demand, and security, like they said, was an afterthought. IoT devices are cheap. This infrastructure maybe was cheap to set up, but securing it is completely different. That costs, that takes time. It's expensive. It's crazy. And with the ever-ending threat of these nation-state actors that are obviously already in our systems, and this is pretty well documented and known that a lot of these systems are probably most likely compromised now. It should be an ever-looming theory. This is why I'm trying to steer away from the fear-mongering part, but I'm also acknowledging that like SMS is probably super insecure, and I wouldn't trust it at all at this point. I would go to a zero trust mentality with most things. If it's not local, if you can't own it, if you cannot if you cannot take it offline without and it not work, those are all issues that you should take into account. You're like, if it has to be connected to the internet, I probably don't need it. If you can go to a lot of offline methods, which we're going to get into in a few minutes, that is something that I would take into account that gives me the sanctity that, like, okay, at least if it's not online, it, you know, it's a little bit safer. So Salt Typhoon, if you're unaware, it is an advanced persistent threat actor believed to be operated by the Chinese Ministry of State Security, which have conducted high-profile cyber espionage campaigns, particularly against the United States. The group's operations place an emphasis on counterintelligence targeted in the United States and the data theft of key corporate intellectual property. The group has affiliated with infiltrated targets in a dozen other countries, nearly on every continent. Former NSA analyst Terry Dunlap has described the group as one of China's 100-year strategy. That's just something to think about. They have a pretty lengthy history from going back as far as 2024. So the officials announced the hackers affiliated with Salt Typhoon have accused access to computer systems of 9 U.S. tel companies, later acknowledged including Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Spectrum, Lumen, Consolidated Communications, and Windstream. The attack targeted broadband networks, particularly core networks, components including routers manufactured by Cisco, which route large portions of the internet. On October 2024, the U.S. officials revealed that the group has compromised internet service provider systems to fulfill CALEA requests by law enforcement intelligence agency to conduct court-authorized wiretapping. The hackers were able to access metadata of users' calls and texts, IP addresses. I mean, it's crazy. A lot of our sets of individuals have been pretty much compromised. You know, our presidencies, our candidates, our people in Congress. I mean, that's crazy. It's something that you have to think about. And this is why I still think that there is no proof that they have been wiped from these systems. That is a scary thought, that they could be reading your messages right now and you have no way of knowing. I mean, a lot of these, and this isn't just like Salt Typhoon is the only adversary. Anyone who has a particular interest in infiltrating and compromising United States communication systems, or if there's adversaries that are starting to realize that the United States cybersecurity division is weak, they might take an advantage to topple our government, maybe topple our infrastructure, where we become less of a threat. You know, the United States military is relatively very highly regarded as a powerhouse across the world. This is why we are involved in a lot with foreign affairs, foreign wars. We give aid because, you know, we have large amounts of capital. We have large amounts of countries that rely on our infrastructure on the military side to keep, you know, safe harbor for everyone. We're kind of like the all-seeing eye, if you want to put in the Lord of the Rings method. That could be a pro. That could be a con. That's not really the point. The point is, if our infrastructure loses its ability to have any power, aka water, if it's targeted, I would recommend and urge our current administration, which has not been doing so good with security, if you look at the Signalgate problem, to secure our, not even just our infrastructure, but educate people on these problems. I'm glad to see Signal having a higher threshold of downloads and people being interested in it, 100%. But we still need to still have a lot of companies that rely on SMS verification, which is insecure, and that can be a problem itself. That's why I recommend if you have the options of passkeys and MFA, hardware authentication token options like YubiKey or the Nitro Key or the Solo Key, I would urge you to go out and purchase one if you have the funds to do so and immediately start securing all your accounts at the highest level. Now, we're going to go into the first section when, say, our cell infrastructure does get taken down and it becomes a problem. What do you do? Who do you call? How do you communicate with people? Because communication at the highest level is very key. That can give you coordinates if you get lost. That can give you can get search and rescue done much more efficient. This is why communication is, above all, one of the most important tools that you can have in the field or in a disaster scenario. When you have ever-growing wildfires and, let's say, hurricane comes and just blasts your house out the gate and it's gone, how do you call for help? You know what I mean? It's not as simple as if you live in a metropolitan area where everything is somewhat walkable, or what if you live in the middle of nowhere? What do you do? How do you find your way back if you're lost after a natural disaster, or if the infrastructure gets knocked out? You know, AT&T last year had a major outage, and so did Verizon for a very long, extensive period of time. And especially if it's done by big natural disaster like a hurricane, tornado, or major fires, like, what do you do? So there's a few options that we have when it comes to comms. I would urge people to go and get their ham radio license. It's not about, oh, they don't care if I have a license or not when a natural disaster happens. It's more or less to educate you and train you where you know what to do when shit hits the fan. This is just like firearms. Whether you're against them, whether you're for them, if you have access to a firearm, you're going to want to go train with it. You're not going to become efficient with your gun at all if you don't train with it, if it just sits in your corner. Just like your ham radio license, it is in the United States. You have to have a license by law. It's very inexpensive to get into as a hobby, to be completely honest. It's not that expensive as everyone makes it out to be. You can get your license, I think, for $15 or $20. That's really to keep donations going for the people that volunteer for this. And then you can get a Boofwang. It's not great. It's not bad. It's not good. It just teaches you. You can get a Boofwang ham-held radio for the prime cost of like $18 to $26, depending on where you buy it from and, you know, whatever is going on with the current administration in terms of like trade deals. They're wildly popular. They're super informed. Like, there's tons of information you can find about like these ham radios, and they're pretty easy to use. There's obviously better ones, and once you go down that rabbit hole, you can find other people that are into this. Now, YouTube-wise, The ham radio crash course is my go-to information, and then the tech prepper. They're very, very knowledgeable people, but ham radio crash course, very knowledgeable guy. I love listening to him speak about ham radio, and I think it's a very, very interesting person just to listen to. I would say get a shortwave radio as well, and a FM AM radio that does Nova. You know what I mean? Like, get that and your ham radio license. You don't need a license to listen, but you do need a license to pretty much speak on it, like, you know, to push that button. Will you get arrested or fined from the FCC if you violate it without a license? Probably not, but most ham radio operators probably most likely would not talk to you. They'll just end it. And if they wanted to find you, triangulate you, and fine you, they can. But I definitely say just get your license so you know that, hey, what bands do I need to be on? Am I going to interfere with emergency telecoms? You know, there's tons of things that can happen that's not good. Now, there is a site called hamradioprep.com. I'm not affiliated with them. I will leave a link into the description for you to go to their website. They're excellent. I did their training, like, to be able to obtain mine. And then they have hamradioprep.emergency communications. That's a completely separate, like, type of training. I highly recommend it. I haven't taken it yet, but I've heard nothing but good things about it. You could literally just do, there are people that are just dedicated to doing emergency telecommunications. It's probably very stressful, but it's very, very cool. If you don't want to get a ham radio license because you're like, it's too far, it's too expensive, why do I have to get a license, blah blah blah, I don't want to take a test, I don't have time to take a test, that's fine. There's a better option. There's something called a GMSR, General Mobile Service Radio license. It is $35. It lasts, I think, like 10 years. You do not have to take a test. You just have to keep you have to give them your address and email address you have always access to. It is public. It is in a public database, so most people say opt for a PO box, which is allowed, so that it keeps your privacy at a higher level. $35, you can go then buy a GSMR radio. The range is much shorter. It is still a lot better than your CB radio, I think, and your regular walkie-talkies. They have a lot of repeaters. There's different laws, like, for each one and what you can and cannot do, what band you can be on. But that is something that you can just read through and kind of, like, understand on a fundamental level what you can and cannot do and the efficiency. Radio has a lot of capabilities. You can send emails over radios. If you got access to data, etc. It's very, very cool. But if, for whatever reason, when this shit hits the fan, GSMR radio, ham radio, walkie-talkies even, just walkie-talkies, just so you can, the ranges generally for those are pretty bad, but if you're in your neighborhood, those are better than, I can't message them. Now, if you're in a tight-knit community or you're in your household and or you're at a protest even if you're at a protest, you shouldn't bring your phone. But if you need to do communications over your phone where it is end-to-end encrypted and a little bit better and doesn't require a SIM card, the Briar Project is super awesome. That's pretty much, like, my thoughts on the radio. Go look at ham, like, go see which license is the best for you and check out Ham Radio Crash Course. It can definitely lead you to a really good guide, but there's some other good options out there that don't require a license and don't require cell phone service. The Briar Project is probably one of the best. You can do it over Bluetooth. Bluetooth has a really short range. If there's a way you could get, like, a Bluetooth receiver to send the signal longer, awesome. I don't know if that's even possible. I'd have to look into it. It routes everything through Tor, so it makes it a little bit more private and anonymous. And you can delete the messages, etc. I have used it on the close end with some people where we just did it. We wanted to see how good it was, like, kind of to work. It is a little buggy and a little funky sometimes. But it's relatively a very good product if you're at a protest or if you're in the middle of nowhere and you don't have cell phone service. Now, that is good because you only need one device. If you don't care about carrying two devices, your phone plus this, the next option is much better. You have two, actually. You have something called Meshtastic, which I actually came across, I think, second or first. I can't remember. Meshtastic is an open-source, off-grid, decentralized mesh network built to run on affordable, low-power devices. This is true. You can build Meshtastic devices very, very cheap. Now, it's very easy to install. They have a web client. They have an Android app that connects to it, and they have an iOS for Apple. And then you can do a command line for if you do want to do so. The documentation is relatively really good, surprisingly. It has long range. No phone required for mesh communication. It's decentralized communication. No dedicated router required. It does it encrypted. Excellent battery life. Sends and receives text between the members of the mesh. Optional GPS based location and more. They use LoRa, which is somewhat proprietary. Which kind of like, I think someone owns it. They own the license to it, but that's okay. It's a long range protocol, which is very accessible in most regions without the need for additional license or certificates, unlike ham. So this gets you into the option if you do not want to go the GSMR route, or if you do not want to go the ham radio route. If you're pretty much interested, they have a very good section of technical overview. So you have a phone, your friend has a phone or a laptop. You connect one of the LoRa devices in between. And then you guys connect to each other over somewhat a long range. Now, you cannot do voice, and you cannot do can't send pictures because LoRa has a limited bandwidth, but it is pretty reliable on its own. The more devices you have, the better the mesh system works because you have more points where it can relay these messages to each other. The longest range right now is 331 kilometers. I believe that's 160 miles away. That's impressive. And it's obviously super crazy that it can even do that. This was not even the highest record when I was first getting into it. So it's 205 miles. 205 miles, that's awesome. That's impressive. Before that, It was not that much. It was pretty insane. It was 158. So they increased it by 50 miles. They did a crazy job. Like, their website on Meshtastic is really, 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 really good. Ground to air, they have a ground to air 128 miles, which is kind of crazy. I don't think anyone else has attempted this. So it's just someone who sent it at the gate. So that's pretty cool. Now, if you hindsight want to do this, you can go buy them from LilyGo. They're pretty supported. They have something. If you want something in an all-in-one, they have the TDAC. The TDAC is an all-in-one. It has supports LoRa. You can attach a external antenna to, I believe, and it's only getting better and better and better. Not only that, it's getting better, it's getting more user friendly, if that makes sense. Like, first you needed it to get these boards and solder, I think, stuff themselves. Then they're like, okay, we'll find a way to make this work. You know what I mean? Like, so they have now pre-made boards that it's very hard to fuck up. Now, your next option is to buy a pre-built option if you want. So if you want a pre-built option, they have these things called the T-Deck. Yeah, here it is. They have the T-Deck, and then there's some Spec 5, I think. It's not super expensive. I think it is. For the complete version where it has like it has a shell and everything, it's called a T-Deck Plus. It's $74 US. If you want, don't care about the shell, you can get it for $59 for the Dev Edition, $43 for the Mestastic Edition. I mean, it's got options. So you got options. You can build one yourself. You can get a 3D printed case, whatever. The Oyster is yours. It does do end-to-end encrypted communications, but they say it's not perfect. You need to take it. Don't take it like serious. There are problems with it, and its security is not. They admit that it's not top number one, and that's okay. But it's better. And if you have a ham radio license, it has an option for you. It has many options. Like, it's very configurable, very customizable. The all-in-one solution is, if you just, like, screw it, I don't want to carry around two devices, and what if my phone breaks? What if this breaks? That's your option. I mean, if you want an all-in-one, there you go. And then you don't have to carry two devices. You can put this in a safe enclosure, and just when you need it, you test it, but when you need it. Your second option is something by the Reticulum Network, or RNS. The network is a cryptographic-based network stack for building local and wide area networks with readily available hardware. There's a really good, both of these have really, really good matrix channels. Go check them out. Their communication is very good. They're still very active. So pretty much the version of Recommend allows anyone to operate and own a sovereign communication of networks to make it cheap and easy to cover the vast areas. You can do it with cheap independent hardware, essentially. It uses strong, modern encryption by default. Anything that is not encrypted, it drops the packets. It ensures pretty much end-to-end connectivity. It newly generates address to become globally reachable in a matter of seconds to a few minutes. It is not possible to establish unencrypted links in the Reticulum network. It is not possible to send unencrypted packets to any destination in the network. All destinations receiving unencrypted packets will be dropped as invalid, so that matters. There is no central control over the address space in Reticulum. Anyone can allocate as many addresses as they need. This essentially makes it very, very, very easy. The hardware, super easy. Any Ethernet device, almost all Wi-Fi based hardware. LoRa using RNodes. RNodes is pretty much one of the devices you can carry around with you. You have to make yourself the creator of the RNode. No longer makes them, I think. That kind of sucks. So, but there's enough documentation to how to do it yourself. It can do packet radio. It can do KISS compatible hardware and software modems. There was an option. There was a push to do a Reticulum portable modem. That would have been cool. UDP over IP networks, TCP over IP networks. You can actually route everything through Tor if you need so. If the internet is accessible, you can route everything over I2P based, by the way, if you want to do that as well. Or you can just do it over LoRa itself. You know, it's pretty flexible, which is a good thing. Minus on the encryption part, that's not flexible. That should always be the default option. That should be the standard, in my opinion. It ought to be the standard, you know, if communications is super important. They don't have, like, the same, like, look of Mestastic is in terms of, like, sending over, like, oh, this is the longest distance. This is somewhat of a smaller project, but not bad, not worse, just a little bit smaller, little noticeability. Reticulum can be used over practically any medium that can support half a duplex channel with 500 bits per second throughput, MTU of 500 bytes. Data radios, modems, LoRa radio, serial lines, you can do it over Wi-Fi and Ethernet devices, free space optical links. I mean, literally the similar systems, all example. I wonder if you could do it over satellite. That'd be kind of sick. I'd have to ask the devs about that one. I do talk to them sometimes. They have a public testnet. They have a manual. You can actually, for the RNode, you can download. He tells you how to pretty much read it offline, just in case. And actually encourages you to share it, like, on a flash drive, just in case the world ends. You can actually you can set somebody up with the RNode outside of this website. It's like a way. You can use it with Cybrand, the Nomad Network, LoRa-based, KISS-compatible amateur radio TNC. I mean, it's got endless options. It's really, really cool. But there is a way to actually have someone install this. Oh, their shop is currently closed. Nice. Maybe come back sometime. It's very awesome, but it's really interesting. They did their last post 5/9/2025, so not too long ago. And the beta phase, but it's they're not quitting it. It's still actively developed, which is what I want, hope to hear. And I just don't want to see project like this end, because I think there needs to be competition. That's just my personal take. And I like to see other people do this, but it does seeing them not make enough money doing this, and it sucks up so much of their time when they could be making more. And I love to see people just do what they love. I'll read this, you know, go read the unsigned.io. Definitely go check them out. I hope that they continue to do good work. But definitely look into learning how radios work, how to make. You can even, actually, one of my first projects I ever learned was making a, I think it's a crystal, a Fox radio. Like, that's an invaluable skill. It was called a foxhole radio. And that was, like, the coolest project. You can build a foxhole radio. It's with very little supplies. It was on my, one of my, it was, I think, Maker Magazine. Oh, my God, this takes me back. It teaches you, it's got an antenna, the foxhole radio, ground, the detector, cat whiskers. I don't think it's actual cat whisker. And then an earphone. And it kind of teaches you how to, like, make a simple radio. Oh, man. Such a very cool on Make. Make has made a ton of stuff that I owe a lot of learning to. And even it's cool to, like, just have that ability, because if you can do that, then you can at least hear the stuff coming in, like the communications. Like, radios, I feel like people don't realize how important radio is. I wouldn't say, like, above water, but it's up there. Water probably overall, you know. And just learning how, like, this stuff kind of works. You can make an AM, FM radio is such an invaluable skill to learn. To be able to do, like, Morse code, maybe even learn a little bit of Morse, just a small amount, Morse code, just learning it would probably be a huge skill to learn. You know, just knowing how to solder too. Soldering's fun. And I think it's cool that people still have a huge passion for this. Now, to move on from radios, because I think that there's another GSMR radio operator that I like listening to. His name is Not a Rubicon Productions. He does a lot of GSMR radio content. He's a GSMR stand, general mobile service radio device, whatever, however you say it. That is kind of like his prerogative. He really likes it. I think he's a ham radio operator or not. I can't remember. But I know I found him through GSMR radio. Now, after you get all the radio stuff down, have a plan. You're like, all right, we get it. We get it, bro. We get you, dude. You've shoved enough radio content in our brain. Have a plan. Depending on your state, depending on where you live, depending on your country, for all the people that are listening to this all over the world, ask yourself, what is the possibility of a threat that is going to hit you? Is it a hurricane? Is it a cyber attack? Is it a terrorist attack? Is it XYZ? And prepare for that. If you live in the mountains, if you live in the mountains and you're listening to this, awesome, thank you. But if you live in the mountains or you live in a very cold climate, if your shit's cold, I know this sounds super stupid, but if your shit's cold, if you get winter 6 months out of the year, prepare for cold weather stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Water, food, shelter. Water, food, shelter, warmth. If you live in hot desert regions, water, 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 a way to stay cool, etc., etc. You know, there is no EDC bag for everyone. There's no the perfect EDC bag. It's an illusion. And anyone who says, oh, that's too much, you don't need that, has never been in any real scenario. Now, obviously, you want to be as light because you don't want to exhaust calories. This is like me. I watched a ton of like Survivor shit growing up for some fucking reason. And I'm like, I'm in the burbs, man. The fuck do I have to worry about? Now I'm like, you know, a little more aware to the world. But there, I learned there's no EDC bag for everyone. You have to adjust to your surroundings. You have to adjust where you would head. Like if you, and I think that this isn't talked about. If you are in a scenario where you have to head north to a colder climate, you're going to be really pissed that you didn't pack the coat. You know what I mean? I always pack a coat and a jacket or a hoodie somewhere on me, you know, in the vicinity. Because it could get cold real quick. It could get wet real quick. A lot can happen. Now, whether or not it happens, you'd rather be happy that you had it than you didn't. I mean, Les Strode, Survivor Man, had a saying in... It's kind of stupid saying because you think... You're like, well, no shit, bro. But he was like, when you gather your wood... It's a really long saying, but it's kind of stupid, but it actually makes sense. When you gather your wood and you look at your pile, if you think you have had enough, double it. And it's like, okay, man, that's a lot of words to just say get more wood. And he's kind of right. You don't know what you're going to burn through. You don't know what you're going to use. You don't know how much you're going to use of. So having like a 3-day assault pack and help hasn't made it to you, and it's day 7, you're going to be really pissed that your bug out bag is only gotten you 2 days in. I say think about where you're going to head. Think of the worst case scenario and prepare for that. If you, I'm talking about, like, I'm not going to have what, like, I say to have a month of your calories and then double it. Like, whatever you think a month of calories is, double it. See what you consume every day, double it. And then water, triple it, because it's the most important. You can go through a lot of water. Like, I would even say buy those emergency water packs, buy a pallet of it, make sure that you've tested, obviously drink a couple, that it's good quality from a reputable source that didn't pack it 5 years and it has a 5-year shelf life, and have it. Like, just sit it on the side. And if it starts getting too close to, like, oh, I got to, like, it's almost day 5, like, year 4, start consuming it, use it, and then replace it. Like, go through all your stuff and replace it. This is just like ham radio. This is just like gun safety. This is like software. Go back and use it and test it. I treat this like backups. You don't know your backups work until your shit... You have a hard drive failure. You never test it when you need it. You test it before you need it, just like anything else. I think that's the best advice you can get. Food, I would put that on the second or third. I would put water first always, but food second. Communications, make sure your radios work. Make sure your batteries are there. You know what I mean? Those are important things to have. Now, if for whatever reason you have all this gear and you're not utilizing it and it is wasteful, then yeah, you're making a mistake. But I would say, you know, enough food to last you 10 days if you have to leave your house packed. Enough water for like 2 weeks if you can. If you can find a 2 weeks worth of water, think about how much you drink, think about how much you can consume, and bring it with you. Transportation, this is the extreme take. This is my personal take. Bicycle. Yes, you're not protected from the elements. And if you do have access to firearm, obviously that can fit on you. get a bicycle, get an e-bike. I think e-bikes or mountain bikes would be preferred. Road bikes, like touring bikes, where they can carry a lot of weight and they're meant to tour. And just like how you practice with all the other things, practice biking. Because your super 80,000 diesel prepper van takes a shit in the middle of the fucking nowhere and you don't have parts, you're going to be really pissed that it just became a paperweight. Especially if the repairability is bad. Bike repairability is pretty high, pretty easy. You can repair most, you can get all the things that you could think of in terms of, like, you could get an entire bike repair kit and fix almost any issue on the side of the road, and it'll fit in the in a bag. If your alternator takes a shit on your vehicle, you're fucked. If your piston rings blow out, you're fucked. If your transmission takes a shit, you can't warranty it. You know what I mean? And people are like, well, they're built for this. Shit happens. We're humans. We make mistakes. Engineering failures happen. You don't know. I'd rather fix a chain on a bike than fix a timing chain that just got annihilated. Or if I forgot to change my oil out. Because I've been driving for like 4 hours or days. This is like obviously the extreme, but you ought to be thinking of the extreme. And again, no one gives a shit about your fucking diesel truck when it becomes a paperweight because your tires are blown out, your axle is blown out, and then you don't have people that can fix it or repair it. You can fix a bike in most scenarios. You could fix a bike, you could get a trailer for a bike, put a bike on it in case your bike takes a shit. And then you can find, you know, it's much easier to haul a bike than it is to haul these fucking prepper vehicles. They're so retarded, like absolutely wasteful. Bikes are more maneuverable. They're quicker to get through traffic, especially when people are exiting. Yes, again, you are exposed to the elements, but it depends on your threat model. Obviously, have a decent vehicle if it's that serious. Like all right, I need to be in a vehicle. I would say you get the most utilitarian vehicle that you can find. Cargo van would be the prime example, or a Toyota Tundra pickup, Ford Ranger, anything that is repairable, not these specifically built fucking 80,000 to 200,000 pussy wagons, because that's essentially what I see, man. You just got fuck you money and you're retarded and your shit's going to break. I would rather Ford Ranger, you know, parts are available pretty relatively okay and it's pretty repairable. Bikes, but I would put bike on number one list. Repairable, mobile, you can cover way more distance, especially if you get a road bike. And I don't know if you'd burn less calories, but you can carry more gear. I'll just tell you that. You can carry more gear and you can be more efficient. Now, let's say down the road, you're like, oh man, I'm tired. You can, like I said, you could, if you have a vehicle, like a bug out vehicle, just get something where you can put your bike on it. Because if something does break, or you run out of gas for whatever reason, or if it's electric, you can bike to the solution and bring it back, hopefully. You know, especially they make good bike trailers now. There are some very high-end expensive ones. If you have an e-bike, make sure that you buy up to two batteries extra. They can get kind of expensive, but at least you have backup options. Your electric bike company isn't going to ship out, you know, batteries if they're fucking going under, or if they have no internet, or etc. I mean, like, I'm just trying to think of like the most realistic scenarios for your location. Which way are you, direction are you heading? Which way are FEMA camps or anything like, you know, disaster relief sections? How far is it going to take you? How long can you last? What is the threats around you? Is it people? Is it riots? I mean, these are all things that you just need to take into account and have a plan for that. Have a plan for each scenario, depending on your state, depending which direction you're going, and depending on your weather. Those are some things that you should just think about. I would look at some good prepper channels, Tech Prepper, The Tech Prepper talks a lot about, I think, emergency comms, the comms channel. There's some good channels out there. Just be very careful when you tread this topic, because you come across a lot of schizophrenic, pussy fear-mongering losers. And I mean that with, like, no grain of salt. There are people that just sit on YouTube to fear-monger their people, and they do it on purpose in order to get clicks. They'll make insane claims. They'll be overzealous. They'll be super extreme. They're like, civil war is happening. And then they get the comments riled up. And then you start seeing a bunch of fucking NPCs have discussions in the comments. That's the problem. Be realistic. Yes, I'm more of on the natural disaster side of preparedness. I think it's good to know. And it's good to, you know, you're like, how does this relate to privacy and security? Well, a lot of these options don't require you to always kind of worry about that. I think that this is an important topic because we are heading into cyber warfare, and our information is being leaked online constantly, sold off to other data brokers, and God knows who else. So I think that this is something to think about. Signal in itself does not require a phone number after you. It doesn't require SMS, so you can just do it over data. So that is a secure way to send communications if you have access to the internet to a certain degree, or a local area network, even better, if that's possible. Setting up your own DNS server as well to cache a lot of stuff locally. So maybe if your services rely on DNS but they can operate locally, that is something that I would go look into setting up. Using information that requires no internet access, that gives you a lot of benefit. Organic Maps and ATIK, I think, is like an attack recon that pairs with Meshtastic. This gives you tactical maps, location positioning, all these things, and GPS without access to the internet. Reculum Network allows you to build a network for infrastructure where people may not have the ability to go out and get, you know, an ISP, because maybe it's compromised, maybe it's authoritarian, maybe it's XYZ. I mean, it's very all over the place in terms of, like, what do I need and what do I don't need, what is bloat, what is not bloat. There's, I mean, a whole dedicated amount of people that do cyber decks for this reason, for, like, in case the world ends. Build yourself a cyber deck if that works for you. You know, do paper maps if that works for you. I think even learning paper maps and paper meds, Dead Reckoning, and not even just that, but, like, learning how to navigate with a bare minimum, that is such an invaluable skill to have, especially if you're in a place where technology isn't really as advanced, or you don't have access financially or literally to that type of stuff. You're, like, I would say on the YouTube side, yeah, definitely check out the Tech Prepper Ham Radio Crash Course and Not a Rubicon Productions. Offline apps, Kiwix is an offline Wikipedia, and Organic Maps is offline maps. These are critical to being able to retain information. If you still have access to a smartphone like GrapheneOS, I think, which is the most, would be the most reliable and realistically one of the most secure phones that you could have in these kind of scenarios where you don't have access to maybe the internet, but you have access to information like map navigation through Organic and Wikipedia, which could be invaluable because they have a whole section of emergency, how to build certain stuff. Having that access to information could be theoretically life-changing. This is why I think KeePass is great, because I have access to all my passwords for stuff that, even if they don't require internet accesses, I still have password vault that is encrypted. I can put my notes in there if I want to. I still have access to those things if I need to use them. That's kind of like the point. And it works offline. It does not require the cloud. It does not require an account. It just requires it to be local on my phone. Now, obviously, you want to take a copy of all these things and put them on a flash drive that preferably has really good long-term storage. You know, open it up every couple months to make sure that everything's there. And always test your backups consistently, never in production. That's just like my final word on that one. Now, the last thing is the U.S. is making some major mistake with the current administration on this. It is kind of looking to ban porn. I know this seems a little silly. Not a fan of this. 404 Media has done it, a bill on it. Pretty much a bill that would ban pornography in the U.S. also takes aim at trans people. I don't know about that much part, but this is something that I have an issue with. If people want to consume stuff like this, that is their business. And you might say, oh, this is just a slight wording and a misunderstanding. Well, look at the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act was introduced to, quote unquote, protect national security, and then it became a fucking nightmare for our privacy. Just throwing that out there. Whether you're left, right, up, down, purple, or retarded, nobody should be for this. Florida just made it illegal. On my last, I was talking about it, to have disappearing messages, which I think if you're a minor, which I still think is authoritarian. I think that's crazy. I should be able to have access to end-to-end encryption at any age and disappearing messages. You know, if you don't believe that, get fucked. You're on the wrong podcast, buddy. So on May 8th, Utah Senator Mike Lee reintroduced his Interstate Obscenity Defamation Act, IODA, with the support in the House from Illinois Rep. Mary Miller, E. Balls, is a anti-trans Republican. I don't really care. I mean, that's not crazy to think about. But having previously pressured Arizona to stop selling trans-themed children's book and supported by legislation to ban trans students from school sports leagues, Miller, meanwhile, is perhaps best known for internationally misgendering trans rep Sarah McBride earlier this year for declaring 22 that the Overturn Roe v. Wade was a historic victory for white life, which is kind of weird. The bill would add new definition of obscene speech to the Communications Act of 1934. If passed, obscenity would be redefined as anything which appeals to the purest interest of nudity, sex, or excretion, depths, describes, or represents an actual or simulated sexual act with the object in order to arouse, titillate, or gratify the sexual desire of a person, and lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. The bill was referred as the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. This is the time Lee's introduced the bill, IOTAs, as many will know, it got defeated in 2020 and 2024. It's pretty much hasn't received any correspondence of the time of writing, meaning that it's unclear whether the bill would gain enough congressional support. IOTA's text would efficiently remove Miller's test resilience on community standards. It's kind of crazy. It's pretty much not allowing people to express free speech. I mean, porn is under the guise of free speech. It is, whether you call it an art or not. If you demean anything pornographic and you say that we cannot consume porn, you are effectively telling me what I cannot consume as an adult, whether you like it or not. I think people ought to have the right to consume porn. It's their choice. No one forces you to watch it. No one forces you to observe it or consume it. It is your choice. And also, the people that work in this industry, they are exercising their First Amendment right to be able to create this kind of content. If I write a sexy book that talks about getting my ass eaten and I release it, I ought to have the right to do that because I'm allowed to be able to print, and that is print my views and my opinions, and the government should never overstep that, in my opinion. I think banning books is, regardless if you like them or not, is a just the right step in direction of authoritarianism, and you are infringing on people's ability to speak freely. Even if I don't agree with it, or if I think the material is gross, I think still people have the right to write whatever they want and just don't read the book. Banning books is pretty fucking insane. Just throwing that out there. It's pretty much Arizona Gov Katie Hobbs signed another such age verification bill law into this earlier week, and Congress Republican Sen. Marshall Burbuck and Majority Leader Tan Thun joined with the Democrats introducing the Kids on Safety, reintroduced the Kids Online Safety Act on Wednesday, which free speech advocates would say it would threaten LGBTQ plus speech while failing to protect children. Absolutely fucking dog shit take. Fuck Arizona for this one. Pretty much signs a bill forcing porn sites to verify age for visitors. I do not like that. I do not want that. I do not want the states to do age verification via anything. These porn sites and these websites do not have the time to play bouncer security, and how are they going to make sure that it doesn't get leaked? I'm good. The bill allows the courts to issue civil penalties to entities who fail to verify ages users. Only one Democrat in District 9 in the Arizona state voted in favor of passing the bill on May 6th, the final House vote on May 7th. Two Democrats, Sarah Blattman and Kathy Volk, voted Republicans to pass the legislation. Governor Hobbs signed 38 other bills on Tuesday, including Senate Bill 1295, which aimed the state's definition of criminal impersonation to include use of computer-generated voice recordings and image or videos. About House Bill 2581 will require the state develop a system for tracking the location of status of sexual assault evidence kits. This one will create Bill 2281. This will create turquoise alert system for adults under 65 who disappear under suspicious circumstances, whatever. 2195, this will introduce child direct applications to prevent display of inappropriate or mature advertisement on the application. 1182, this will prohibit counties and cities from eradicating ordinance on regulations that restrict general construction of areas between. Okay, I don't care about that. That is insane. And I don't get why people would be for this. Like, who cares if people want to consume porn? I can just lie about my age and use a VPN in a state where it's allowed. You didn't solve anything. Like, unless they have some insane way to detect that you are using a VPN and, like, they're like, you have to block it. And these porn industries are just going to pull out of states. They've already done it. They've pulled out of states. They're like, so this is, I think, the slow inch towards insane authoritarian overreach of the government telling us what we can and cannot consume, even if it's good or bad for us. I do not care if people have porn brain. That is their decision. Your For You page is based on what you look at. That is your decision. If you really care about a free, open source, algorithmic-less feed, then just go to Tusky. Go to Mastodon. Go to PeerTube. Go to fucking Noster. Go to what's the other one? Blue Sky. I mean, just have any other. Just go to these other options. Fuck these platforms. They don't give a shit about you. If all you're getting is gooning material, it might be a you thing, because the algorithm is based off you. But it could be pushing a narrative. I mean, there's no proof that it isn't. It's just something that like irritates me when these state reps are so retarded and technically illiterate that they're just like, ban porn or ban this. XYZ, and I think free speech advocates should be very pissed this is even an idea, and they should write to their representatives immediately saying to outright reject this ideology, and if not, when election season comes around, don't fucking vote these morons back in. I mean, that's like something that I completely stand on. You know, we live in a free society and a democracy, or a constitutional republic, not the fucking point, but we live in an era where we have the power to vote these fucking morons out and get people that just align with their values. I don't think that it is bad for a parent to step in and be like, hey, get off the internet. We're going to restrict the internet access, and we're going to make sure that we make you understand that this is there's bad people out there and there's bad things out there. Like, have a talk with your kids to like a certain degree on like how technology works, how to navigate it in a safer way. Teach them about end-to-end encryption, or have them listen to one of my rants where I'm like screaming at their parents to use Signal, or at least Apple to Apple, or you know, RCS to RCS to a slight better degree, but it's nowhere near perfect as or good as Signal, or like other options like SimpleX, where they take security at a high value. These social media companies and giants do not give a fuck about you. So in short, TLDR, not even TLDR, in a short synopsis, I would say the best thing to do is to make sure that you, these rights of yours don't get infringed upon, and you talk to your local and state reps, especially around election season or midterms, because they'll actually probably listen a little bit more. Definitely educate yourself on shortwave radio software, you know, how radios work, ham radio, GSMR. Have a plan. I urge you to have a plan. Think about your state. Think about where you're at, and think about what direction you would go. And don't make this like you like paranoid. Just have a plan. It's not paranoid to have a plan and be prepared. I think these are good things. Storms just knocked the shit out of my power like a week ago. But because I have run my most critical server infrastructure on and my internet, my router, as long as the ISP doesn't go out, I run it on backup power supplies. That's like just a base system, just so that in case that those go out, I make sure that before they're going to shut down, that everything is saved and you know, clean, so nothing happens. Like, just very simple. Have a plan. Have a take your assault pack. If you have an assault, like a 3-day assault pack, make it in a 10-day assault pack. If you think that it's going to matter, if you think you're going to hunker down, find the maximum amount of food that you can live off of and double it. Same thing with water. Educate yourself about, you know, gun safety, if you do own a firearm or anything, even learning how to lockpick, how do locks work, how does cars work, how to do minor fixes and maintenance and repairs. Get a bike and definitely start cycling, because I think it's better than running and better than driving if it's a big scenario. I mean, these are just like simple topics that I do come across and think about, and I appreciate if you listened through the whole thing and share it with your friends. That'd be awesome. If you don't, whatever. I try not to do stuff like that because I think it is somewhat cringe, but I just want to get this kind of information out to people, and I enjoyed, you know, thinking about this, finding this stuff. I will put this all in the show notes. Essentially, just so you can kind of find the information yourself and you're not like lost, you know what I mean? I think that's a huge difference. Okay, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. I'm gonna start uploading at a way better schedule. And if anyone that's listening does any drawings or intro music, again, please. Just reach out to me on Mastodon or Blue Sky. I think I finally updated my channel to on my YouTube channel. I have a link stack that has where you can contact me anywhere. I would like to get a thumbnail for just regular episodes, and I'll just change that, like, you know, like episode 6, episode 7, or like have the title in it. I would like one. If not, it's whatever. And then same thing with intro, like maybe some intro music. If anyone's out there, shoot me a message, give me a price. If it works out, we'll make some work, you know, preferably in Monero. And I thank you for everyone listening. You guys have a good night, and I'll see you in the next one when I have more thoughts.